Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of the Disc Golf Answer Man. I am Bobby Cool, Daddy Slick Breeze, and I have with me on the phone Eric Oakley. So if it sounds a little different, it's because he's on the phone, but we are good to go. Robert is spending some time with family, so he wasn't not able to be on the show tonight, but Eric Oakley is cooler sometimes, so that's good. Sometimes.
I learned from the cool Daddy Slick Breeze, cool Daddy Slick Breeze. How to be cool.
Yeah, nice. Okay, so Earl, right before we recorded, though, we were talking a little bit about what you have going on, where you're traveling, where you're coming from, where you're going to, where you're stopping at in between. So kind of give us the quickie on that.
Yeah, just finished up in Oregon, the Oregon Swing. Portland Open was fantastic. Both courses played great. Blue Lake feels a little bit like it needs some upgrading via a couple things. I can touch on that here in a little bit. We went to the Beaver State Fling, fantastic event. Milo McKay was awesome. Everything was good outside of the amount of rain we dealt with, which is something I want to talk about a little bit as a rant or so. I tend to do that anyways. So just a couple things to touch base on when it comes to trying to elevate our sport and kind of give everybody the down low. Played pretty well at Portland, did not play that great at Beaver State Fling, but I had two solid rounds at Beaver State. It was just that opening round that was really weird, but again, conditions felt like they had a bigger impact than they should, but when it dumps a lot of rain, disc golf can be hard sometimes.
Yes,
I want to figure out how those amphibians played, because some people found a way that they're just unaffected by the rain. So interesting.
Maybe they've played in the rain quite a bit, and so they're just kind of used to it.
Or they're lizard people. That's where I'm at.
I started watching the FBO, and then I can't remember, something came up, and I had to take off. I wasn't able to watch the whole coverage. People that are watching? Did you watch any of the live stuff?
No, I didn't get to.
Oh, I didn't know if it, because I knew it was the first year ever that they were able to do live, and they only did the final round. I was curious to see how. I know that they were having some issues while I was watching it, but it wasn't too technical. But there was kind of I don't know what the term is, but like during a commercial, I could hear some of the commentators kind of talking and stuff. So, but that's not a big deal. I mean, that happens all from time to time. So. All right, cool. Well, we're going to get into it. We'll get to a few questions, and then we'll talk about the tournament and kind of your thoughts on it. Get your, called? Boots on the ground feel for the tournament and stuff like that. Sure. So, let's get started. Guys, as always, you can send your questions in to discgolfanswerman.com. Submit them to us, and we will try to get them on the air. This one's from Reese. He says, I've been looking for a quality Airbnb in Emporia, Kansas. Well, boy, do I have a place for you. You have any suggestions? The difference between an ordinary and extraordinary is just that little extra. I'm so tired of ordinary Airbnb. Is there an Airbnb that has that little extra? Yes. My Airbnb has that little extra. Now, we may have done that question before, but I did it again to let you guys know that Emporia, Kansas, if you're looking to play some disc golf where there is literally at least 11 courses within a 20-minute drive, most of them within a 10-minute, less than 10-minute drive, if you want to play disc golf all weekend long, check out the Dynamic Disc Store. Check out, maybe get a tour of the warehouse. If you want to check all that out, make sure you look up my Airbnb listing on Airbnb, and you can stay the weekend if it's open. So appreciate you. There's some Disc Golf Network people staying there for the Worlds weekend. That got booked, so that was nice.
Nice.
So, all right, let's move on to a real question. This one is from Bowser. Hey, gentlemen, love the show. Why do manufacturers change Tour Series discs so much from year to year? I have some 2018 Nibo T-Birds, and they are amazing. The perfect disc. But the 2017s and the 2019s aren't even T-Birds. They feel like Eagles. Totally different from the 2018s in themselves. It is very frustrating when trying to buy replacements, especially in that I don't have a shop to go to and hold and feel the disc before buying.
I think there are a number of factors. I mean, you probably know some of this when, you know, with your time at DD and, you know, hearing the meetings of how manufacturing and everything goes. It's, this manufacturing's tough. It changes from year to year. The plastic that's available might be changing, and the plastic manufacturers might be getting different plastic in, and you're having to constantly change that with new technologies about how to make things swirly and or trying to put out a product that sells to the people. You know, I think the only product that's been able to kind of break that mold is the Sexton Firebird, where that's been able to stay the same as a Color Glow Sexton Firebird. But they've changed in different ways. Is there's difference between the runs, tons of differences between the runs. Some came out flatter, some came out with a little bit of dome, some are straighter, some are more overstable. So it just changes. And when discs cool and when discs, you know, get shaped up is very different. It depends. Like you could have a difference in temperature of 10 degrees and that might change completely how the disc molds up. And so those are factors that are still, I think, being explored in the disc golf world as manufacturing goes. So it's not as easy to just make the disc super, super consistent over and over and over again. I know companies are constantly working at that because that's how you make the best product. So, you know, I think they're trying, but it just sometimes doesn't come out the way you want.
Yeah. Just other factors. I wouldn't say it's done on purpose. So just some stuff happens. Totally. Next one is from Danny. How much, How much does a huge run up help, like Conrad or some others who start way behind the tee pad? I usually start my walk up with my right shoulder towards where I'm throwing. I get about 275 to 325 max distance.
To be real, I think you run into the issue of inconsistencies when you add more to your run up. In theory, you should throw farther with a bigger run up. But it's like you're just creating more variables to get in line to transfer that weight to make it good. I have a very short run up where most of the time I stay on the tee pad. Unless I'm my diagonal, and that if it's a skinny tee pad, then I'm not in there. So it's very easy for me to generate the type of power I want from a short run up, but I've chosen to stick to that because of I have a higher accuracy. Could I throw another 30 to 50 feet if I did more like James? Maybe. Do I know where the disc is going to go? Nope. Yeah. So I would much rather know exactly where it's going to go. Throw my 450 to 500 foot shot if I'm throwing for distance and let that be good enough. Like throwing 550 isn't going to really help me on most courses yet. And if we get to that point, I hope I'm playing Masters at that point, whenever, if that becomes the new standard 550. So
yeah. Crazy. All right. So if you're just tuning in on YouTube and you're thinking Eric sounds different, or you're trying to figure out why it's just me, Eric is driving on the road and was able to stop and get a place good enough for a phone call, but the video wasn't working. So it's just me. Robert's spending some time with family. So, and for audio listeners, that is why he may sound a little different because he's on the phone, but he still sounds good and loud as ever. So tell us a little bit about what went down at the Beaver State Fling.
I want to touch on Portland.
Oh, Portland. My bad. I'm sorry. I forgot.
So a couple things. Portland, you could tell a lot of work was done in general. Just the two main factors that I think come into place is just the one part that we all share, or the two parts that we all share in disc golf as competitors. One being the tee pads, which it gets a little bit rainy and mm-hmm. those tee pads are old. And you're talking about those tee pads are old and in a place where they get lots of rain. So they need to be updated. And I had this conversation. It's something I want to bring up to the Pro Tour Players Committee and different things along that nature. So I'm using this as a way to bring this up as for future events to hopefully that somebody hears this and it goes somewhere, is that we need to ensure safety on the tee pads, even when the weather is not good. And that is difficult to do. And I know that that is difficult to do. But if that means you have 18 volunteers that are sweeping off tee pads and or doing some type of process between cards, then that's what you do if you know your tee pads aren't going to be good. We did, however, at Glendevere have incredibly good turf pads that when it rained, they were fantastic. So to give praise that Blue Lake had some slippery tee pads, but Glendevere had amazing turf pads that were, from what I understand, might be the future for our turf pads going forward. They were fantastic. I don't know how they will do over time, but if we put them in on courses going leading up to an event, which means more expenses and more time, it would still be worth it because they were fantastic. You never worried about your grip. They weren't too grippy. They were the perfect amount that made you feel comfortable, and it was good for your body. So that's one factor that we'll talk about, the good and the bad. The second thing, and this is where basket standards will, this will lead into the Beaver State Fling of something that happened as well, which I don't know if you saw the video yet of Corey Ellis, but all right, cool. This is going to be great information. You're going to want to go look this up. A couple things happened. The new veteran basket is, and this is just opinion-based conversation.
Wait, the when new you say veteran, the new veteran, the, where they changed the angle at the top, yes, where it's no longer angled, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The new veteran basket, I believe, is the weakest of the approved baskets we have at the moment. And with that being said, I say it's the weakest because I see too many inconsistencies on the basket. See a lot of stuff catching, a lot of stuff popping out that just doesn't allow you to gain confidence on the basket. Now, and this is not just coming from my own personal experiences. This is coming from what I've seen and what has been discussed with other players. So where my brain goes is that we need to limit the amount of baskets down to a smaller number that is approved going forward. That I think we should have three baskets that everyone agrees on, that we think these are the best, and that's it. But too much money is involved in baskets, and that's part of it. So that's all I'm going to say about it. I just think, I'm not saying it's a bad basket, but I don't think they really improved the veteran basket at all. Where I think it stayed as good as it was before, but it's just okay. And that's not good enough for the Pro Tour, in my opinion.
Somebody on YouTube, tell me where I can find this video. I see on Reddit that they're talking about it. Someone said, I watched him make his putt on coverage, but his disc falls out of the bottom of the basket.
Okay. So onto that.
Oh, this is a different thing?
No, this is a different thing. This is not from the veteran. That was my thing about Portland Open, is that it just doesn't feel very good. It's just like those baskets aren't very good. And we saw them at the DDO that you saw people get spit outs. It just happens. The chains aren't heavy enough, so on and so forth. But at the Beaver State Fling, we are dealing with what I would call some Franken baskets, where the cage is old, an old end of a cage, but they have newer tops. The basket that was in question supposedly was damaged by the storm, but it was welded back, and they thought they had done a good enough job welding it back.
Wow.
And it created this little gap to where if a disc came in vertically, but kind of diagonally vertically into this slot, it would fall out through the bottom. Wow. Corey Ellis had a putt, came in, hits chains, falls into the bottom of the cage, looks great, but then just kind of goes through a black hole, goes into the bottom, and lands on the ground. You're wondering what does that mean? In the vague definition of the rules, this disc is not supported by the basket.
Right.
He tapped in, took his bogey. In reality, that shouldn't be the case. Those cages should have been replaced years ago and should have been tested. It's a hard thing to figure out because it took them a while to find the spot of how to put it through. So that sucks.
So it was just like his disc just happened to be in the one position.
One spot.
Falling.
The very one. And it falls out the bottom. It sucks because he ends up getting third place by a stroke to Joel Freeman, where the basket had a malfunction that is out of his control. And it's just, here's the thing. This is where basket standards have to be checked, and we're still not big enough to get to that point to where we can have one basket that travels with us, and everybody knows it's like, oh, hole nine's basket is broken, so we had to get all new hole nine. That's different, and that changes. We don't have that luxury yet, because to travel with 20 plus baskets is what it would take from event to event that get put in, that have to have that have to be have to fit universally to all the sleeves, or have stands that we can use. It just gets very difficult.
Plus,
very
those fast. They could get damaged in travel. And
totally. Yeah. It brings a whole mess of stuff. But I think the Pro Tour community and the people would much rather see something like that. Consistency amongst the baskets. Putter, we can get used to how we're supposed to putt on baskets, right? Like, we're not having to know that a veteran has lighter chains, so jamming a putt is probably ill-advised when, you know, on other baskets, jamming a putt is the right thing to do. Like on a Prodigy or a Mach X, like, it is very, you should be hitting the chains with some stank and getting it in that basket, because, you know, they don't like soft putt. So you run into that issue where people are actually having to modify their putt slightly enough, which kind of sucks, because if you shoot a basketball or if you putt on a golf hole, you know, a golf hole doesn't just like, oh, I'll just spit stuff out. It's like, it's all about the right weight and everything. But it, if it goes in, it's generally going to go in. Same thing with a basketball hoop, to the same concept. It is, they are all to the same regulation. So it's like, we have to try and look at that. So that sucked. And I feel bad for Corey, and hopefully we can figure out what to do with standards of baskets in the future. And I know that it's you know, you want to try things out for a year or two, so you give them a good try. Like, I think we should, you know, we'll see how Worlds goes at back in Emporia. So we'll get another round of using the new veterans to see if it's maybe it was just a bad event, or if the baskets just still aren't to the standard that we need. Yeah. We'll see.
Interesting. I'd like to see a video of it. If you guys find a video, maybe post it on the Disc Golf Answer Man Facebook page.
Yep. Show Bobby.
Group, so I could see that. The video of the one. Something happened with Corey Ellis at one event, and then something else happened to him at another event?
This was just at Beaver State Fling.
Oh, at Beaver State Fling. Okay.
That was it. And it's pretty crazy. And, okay, last part about something that we talked about, wind standards before, after the DDO. I do think we are at a point where too much rain is an issue as well. It can be, because I use this as like, everybody didn't have to play in it, but there was a level of rain that we dealt with where green areas, walking between holes, there was a safety issue that was happening because the sheer amount of rain that we had at the Beaver State Fling. There was one hole, the hole that Joel Freeman aced. When I played it in round one, the shot he threw, the hyzer, which is the play to birdie that hole, was not an option because of the sheer amount of rain. The branches of the tree that you're under were hanging over the tee pad and blocking the hyzer shot. And then continue that to where it rained that much to hang branches down that heavily. And then that was round one. And then it kept raining in round two. And then it dumped in round three. So you're talking about a course that got completely soaked, like to the point where I'm playing in round one, and I think it was in the upwards of 6 or 7 tee pads had standing water on them.
Wow.
One of the holes, the Brian Cole of the Pro Tour, was digging a trench to help get the water off of the pad.
Yeah.
But they had to do that. They've done that at USDGC as well. So we're getting to a point where, you know, baseball games have rain delays and other things like that. Like, we have these things. Like, we should be trying to explore wind limits, rain limits, and everything because of safety. And is it actually helping the game? It's something that I would love to explore. This isn't I think the Beaver State Fling should have been canceled, but I think it's something that needs to be aware, because the other part about it is Milo got thrashed by the sheer amount of foot traffic and everything. Like, it is going to be a lot of damage of that property just from the amount of rain and the amount of people who are walking in the same directions between holes and so on and so forth. So that's something that is also, I think, something that we should be keeping in mind as well.
Okay. So this is the segment where we call, and we've done it before, but I've never called it a segment. So this is the Bobby pushback.
All right.
So I get what you're saying. I mean, with the wind, you were saying that move events around so they're in the less windy time. Mm-hmm. It has the rain been an issue at Beaver State Fling in years past?
No, but it's rained at Beaver State. But so this was record rainfall. But I think what we want to do is use this as if an event has too much rain where the conditions now become unsafe, you lead to postponing/canceling said event.
Yeah.
We need to figure out what that looks like.
Man, I don't know that you'll ever get to a consensus with that. I remember at Dynet with that mm-hmm. Glassmont Open 1 year.
When it canceled
was like,
the round.
Right, but it was because of thunder and things like that, lightning and stuff like that. And, you know, people were like, oh, it's just a little rain. Oh, it's just raining. It's like, no, it wasn't the rain. So it's, I guess I could just see people, you know, we play outside. So the weather is always going to be an element, whether it's wonderful weather or whether it's, you know, record downpour. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know how you could. I mean, what do you determine? I guess one person would have to determine that it was unsafe to play. But then what do you do for the people that played when the weather was not? Like you said, early in the round, things weren't that bad. And then later in the round, as the rain came down, things were bad. So then what do you do in that situation where half the field is played in good conditions and now you've got you're postponing? I don't know. Man, that's very complicated.
Trust me, and that's why this isn't a full thought out thing yet. This is like, I want to start these discussions. I want this to become something that we try and figure out as a collective, because again, and I use Blue Lake as an example here. Blue Lake is the course that Paul Ulibarri had his knee injury on. It ended his season because of, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure was something happened on a tee pad and was not good. It might not have been a tee pad issue, but again, we should be looking to avoid these situations if possible. I slipped in the middle of an open fairway on grass and I was wearing decent shoes. It was fine. I didn't go for a big shot. I was throwing a pretty routine sidearm approach and it was so much rain that my feet just went right out from under me. That could have been bad. That could be one of the situations that we deal with. Could that happen on a dry day? Sure, that could happen plenty of times and people slip in normal conditions. But we should really be thinking about player safety in a lot of these situations, in my opinion.
I wonder has there been any precedence with the PGA, with golf, that something like this happened where halfway
through the day? Rain delays happen all the time. It's not just storm delays. They have rain delays, but the problem there is that when the greens when they have standing water on them, you can't putt.
Right.
Right. Like we're throwing from, you know, not on the ground, but it reaches a point where I genuinely think it's important to keep these things in mind going forward. So
you're not sure. You're just saying that there needs to be something in place to take care of it, other than if you've got a terrible storm or it's raining really hard and there's no lightning to stop us, that maybe there is some other elements that may need to do something with the game that day.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm not sure what that is. I'm not sure what a wind standard looks like, but I really do think it's important to start to have that discussion.
Right.
It's important to start to think about these things because it would be a really big bummer to have, Simon Lizotte come back out. We're at the preserve and it's super rainy and the course is getting flooded and he slips and tears his ACL and then doesn't get to finish out the rest of his season.
Yeah.
Like I use that as an example because he is a high profile player. Same thing for Valerie Manahuano. It's one of these things. Manahuano. We could see people's, riding these waves just get injured over something small. And it shouldn't just be the top players. We should also be considering the people who are grinding it out on tour doing it. We don't want to see them have their seasons cut short and things like that. That is, those are really important factors that I think we aren't thinking about. Do I think the PDGA cares about player safety at the current state of things? Not with how they set up the schedules. We've talked about this before. So we're diving into some really deep things, but again, this is where I really would like to explore a conversation, a discussion. Yes, I understand that everybody has to deal with rain and then it might mean less tournaments, but it means less tournaments because of player safety. Do you really want to go down that argument? Like, we want to put our players at risk, then our players' lives and livelihoods aren't as important as the entertainment and the you know, trying to play.
Yeah.
That we're bleeding into something that is kind of toxic, in my opinion.
All right, I won't push back hard on this one then. Just a little little baby push.
No, I like the Bobby pushback, or should we call it the Bobby spit out, or something like that? We got something. There's something there.
Anyway. All right, let's get back to the questions. We have a few of them. So this one from Emerson. He says, some top tier pros famously use understable putting putters. Paige is a prime example with her Fierces and previously Deputies. Can you explain how she is able to successfully use putters like these during windy tournaments and still find consistent success? I've mostly played wooded courses and used to putt with a Deputy. Until the time I traveled to an out-of-state tournament, I had my putt handed to me due to putting woes that can 93% be attributed to the wind. Also, do you know of any good Airbnbs in Emporia area? Actually, Emerson, I do. You can go to Uncle Bobby Jr. on Instagram. Go to my link in bio and you'll see a link to check out to see if there's any dates available. This episode brought to you by Bobby's Airbnb in Emporia, Kansas.
So good.
Anyway,
I love it.
So how do they throw with these understable putters?
It is, I think a good part of it is that you're talking about people who, you know, they've developed their putting styles over the years. They've figured out different ways. And I think a big part of what those players have done is their putts are not as affected by the wind as others because they have really good spin control and angle control that they understand it. I don't think inside the circle putts are affected as much as people really think. I don't think there's a very big difference. I think so much of putting is what feels comfortable in your hand and what is allowing you to hit your hit point constantly and having to just come out when you want it to. Those are the bigger factors of what a putter does. And I mean, I know of Chandler Kramer comes to mind. He putts with a slammer. And like, let's be real. If we're talking about general putters, the slammer is a awful putting putter.
Yeah.
Terrible. But his putting style works for it. That's a wildly overstable, not very glidey putter. So it goes in the opposite end of the spectrum as well. So I think it's, when you talk about Paige, it's just, she has perfect control. And Joe Miller's comment is really funny in the chat. When you spin the disc, it comes down to it. If you were to tell me, if you look at like a Owen Scoggins or a Josh Anton putt, you know, Josh Anton uses AVRs, Owen Scoggins, I would imagine, uses an AVR type disc, which aren't very overstable, which are more on the neutral side. They have fluttery putts, but they do well in the wind. I have watched many rounds where Anton flutters a putt into a crazy headwind, but it goes in. But I think it's so much of, he has so much disc control that he understands how to play every spin, every revolution of the disc. So I genuinely think it comes down to is the amount of practice these players have put in is why they can, you could put any putter in their hand, they'd probably figure it out in a round. And start jamming putts from everywhere.
Yeah, good deal. All right, next one is from Morgan. Mm-hmm. Morgan says, does more spin on the disc equal a longer flight, or is it arm speed and run-up / walk-up, or just a combination of it all? I can get my disc to fly how it should, but can't seem to get the far distance I want consistently, like 400 feet.
That's a great question. I think a big part of it is all those factors have to come together. I do think spin is a bigger factor in getting a truer flight. So some discs don't act to the flight numbers like people think, where more spin is going to allow the disc to be to fly truer to those numbers, I guess is the way I'd put it. So, you know, some people will throw a leopard and it'll be wildly understable, but that's because they are generating more spin, more speed, and everything behind the disc, where some people, the leopard is incredibly neutral and it's dead straight and or kind of on the stable side, but that's because they aren't getting the same amount of power and or getting the disc up to speed in both terms of like of power, but also in revolutions. So again, probably it's a factor of both, but also is a big factor of the spinning is good. I genuinely would implore everyone to get a catch style disc and or frisbee and learn how to spin a disc because it is really good for your control in the long run. There are plenty of shots where you're going to have to throw little touch approaches where having good spin is good. So, yeah. But on most distance drives, you don't need to worry about spinning the disc.
Yeah.
I guess is kind of weird. Like, you don't want to be thinking spin on a max distance drive, but you kind of want to be thinking spin on an approach. Because, you know, does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you're talking about playing catch with a lid or something like that. I always think I always find it funny when I, because it doesn't happen a lot, but like when I, people that don't know that I play disc golf or something, they'll have a frisbee and we'll play frisbee, and you know, I can be fairly accurate with my spin in that type of setting and stuff, and people are like, mm-hmm. Wow, you're really good, you're really accurate, and I was like, yeah, I play disc golf.
Yeah, no big deal.
No big deal.
I'm a disc golfer.
I know how to spin a disc, so.
Spin me right around, baby.
The one thing we didn't talk about is that, and I'm excited to be able to answer yes to the question, is did you get to play any disc golf this weekend? And obviously,
you
played disc golf this weekend, but I got to play some disc golf this weekend. And we even played the weekend before. I played Case Community Park in Sand Springs, Oklahoma, and then this past weekend, I played at McClure Park, and I met up with a friend that I met at Pickleball, where he saw me wearing a Dynamic Disc shirt, and we started talking about disc golf, and so we met up a few times to play, and then I took my grandson, Eli, out there to play. We had a great time. I got to try out more of the Clash discs that I'm throwing now.
Nice.
Yeah, and I really love the Mango. The Mango has pretty much taken place of my Verdict. As far as throwing nice, so great glide and nice distance, and then a really hard, reliable fade at the end for me. Now, for someone like you, it's probably going to be more super straight, I would imagine, as hard as you throw.
I watched Brandon Hauer, who's a you know, new to the scene touring guy. He's dealt with some injuries, but I saw him throw in round one a berry, a blueberry, and he made it look. It was like, that is a really good flight of a disc. I was very impressed with the way he made it look. I have some that you got for me. I just haven't had any time to test it because it's been nonstop. But then I had COVID and it's just like chaos. But I am looking forward to it. This is like the perfect week coming up where I'm going to be able to test them out. So
nice.
I love to hear your review about it too, because, you know, I feel like I've seen you play enough to kind of like, okay, cool. If it's stable for you, it might be like a nice straight flyer for me.
The Mango's great. The Berry is a nice straight flyer for me. Again, has really great glide. And then the other thing I threw was Ginger, which is a very, very overstable fairway driver for me, for sure.
Okay, nice.
So anyway, I'm excited that I've played disc golf twice in the last couple of weeks. I think it's great. So
let's go.
And then this weekend
Eli.
Yeah, with Eli. So
nice.
And then this weekend I'm coming to Emporia to clean the Airbnb house sponsored the sponsor of our episode, Bobby's Airbnb. No, the lady that usually cleans it is not cleaning it this week. So I'm going to go down there Friday, and Eli's going to ride with me. We're going to play Hammond Park Friday night, and then we'll play something Saturday morning early because it's going to be freaking hot in Emporia.
Yeah.
And then I'll clean the house and we'll leave. But so I'll get to play some disc golf this weekend as well.
You going to try to get any pickleball in? Those courts are sweet.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yeah. I need to see if maybe they'll play Saturday. I don't know. Well, we may not have time. It's going to be a super quick trip.
Sure.
So I feel you. Get back for Father's Day. So Anyway, all right, we got one more question, and this one's from Brett Nix. A friend of mine recently bought a Westville anvil that is a Nico LaCastle fundraiser. Since Nico no longer plays for Westside, does he still get funds from the disc? Or are companies benefiting from player name, image, likeness without compensating them for it? Well, that's kind of a sticky, no.
It's all agreed upon. It's all agreed upon. Behind closed doors.
Yeah, there's nothing like, oh, they're still getting money off my name. No, there's all kinds of agreements in place that that everybody agrees to when someone is leaving a company, whether they get to still sell or not sell. So no, no one's getting like, or at least none that I know of. Now, none that I know of, I would imagine. But I would imagine a manufacturer, at least the ones that I've worked with, are very clear on what happens if someone were to leave a certain company as far as royalties and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if
you I don't mind divulging what happened. You know, when I left ED,
that's up to you. Yeah.
It was agreed upon as a, you know, hey, we're going to front load all the discs that we have made for you that are stamped and everything you're going to get the royalties on. So they kind of advanced that before a bunch had sold, which was really nice of them. And I appreciate that because, you know, it is, they're using my likeness to make that money. So that was something that was what we had worked out. There's a good chance there is a chance that maybe something wasn't worked out or there was a breach of contract. So a party might be able to sell them without having to pay the player. Like, we don't know in this situation. Yeah. So it is good to support the players. And I would imagine your purchase did go and support Nico, which, you know, it's good to see him out on the road and it's good to see him playing again because he came off of not being able to play Portland and showed up at Beaver State, which was good for him.
Yeah, so
not his best finish, but still a good finish in the top 20.
And just as a shameless plug for that I have some investment in, you can, if you want to continue to support Nico, you can go to you can find Clash Discs at Local Route or at Infinite Discs.
Mm-hmm.
Go Infinite, and they have a Nico LaCastle Ginger Signature, a Mint, which is an overstable mid-range, and a Popcorn, which is a very sweet putter. So if you want to support Nico that way. And of course, if you're at Infinite Discs, make sure you check out some Eric Oakley discs as well. I'm sure you got some. What do you got right now out there?
Alpacas. Okay. Pathfinders are dropping here soon. When I go, we're going to be discussing more in lines of what type of dynasties are coming. We might do a special small stamp / run of some other discs from some other companies that I'm going to be chatting with here very soon. You know, been big fan of a handful of discs, so it's going to be great.
Yeah, so good stuff there. All right, well, that's all we have as far as questions. Eric, I appreciate you stopping on your trip to do the show with us. I know it didn't work out for video, but worked perfectly for audio, so...
Well, I appreciate everybody tuning into the chat and make sure, you know, share this around, let people know about it. We have we will get to the giveaway, but we are going to wait till all three of us are back.
Yes.
Together. So Tom Henry, I believe this month. I know I've been saying that for a while, but it's like kind of one of those things. It's just it's been working on the artwork and also dealing with the manufacturer of how quick it can happen, but it's going to happen. Reese Powell, I'm hoping. I'm hoping for those Glow Metal Flake Dynasties if it can happen. That is the goal.
All right, cool. Well, Eric, you get back on the road. Be safe. How much more traveling do you have for today?
Oh, let's find out, shall we?
Okay.
I have to my destination 5 hours.
Oh, gosh. All right. You get back on
the
road.
It's going to be a late one.
All right.
It's going to be great.
All right. Be safe, man.
All right. Love you, Bobby. Love everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Be awesome.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, guys, on the YouTube, thanks for tuning in. I know it's a little different just to see me, but I appreciate you tuning in on the audio. I know it might be a little bit different with him being on the phone, but for you two, you YouTubers, only seeing this face, I'm sure was different. So anyway, we'll see you guys so much. I appreciate y'all. Yeah, if you want to support players, I have a vested interest in Clash Discs, so make sure you check out ClashDiscs.com for what they have, and then check out Infinite and Local Route online to get a hold of some of them. And then, of course, if you're at Infinite Disc, make sure you check out Eric Oakley's signature line. All those purchases that you do when you're shopping for discs and you're thinking, let me support some of my favorite people, check those discs out. And that's very much a great support. So see you guys.